Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Previously on X-Men.
This is TFG and Mike with the Geekcast Radio Network. I would just like to mention that in this episode of Tooncast, because it is dedicated to the X-Men, Spider-Man, and Iron Man Marvel 90s cartoons, I did get permission from that guy with the glasses, Doug Walker, to use the audio from his X-Men theme music video, so you will hear that first. So yeah, up next, Tooncast 19.
Roll 'em. Songs that don't need lyrics by Ed of them anyway. Ha!
X-Men are cool. X-Men rule. They're no fools. X-Men duel. Fighting ghouls. They're not tools. Breaking rules.
First you got the Wolverine. Super Mega Death Machine. Gambit's cards are really keen. Shine like rubies. Cyclops always leads the team. While sometimes making out with Jean. Rogue and Storm are real hotties. With big boobies.
Jubilee cheerfully fireworks off with glee, and the Beast once at least quotes the book War and Peace. ESP is the key constantly for Xavier.
And there's some other X-Men too, but they don't have a lot to do. Just some cameos for you to view.
And there's this evil bad guy who lost his parents cause they're Jews. Magneto's his nom de plume, it's true.
All these guys want this guy flying high in the sky, really try not to die, getting by knowing why they are the saviors. Xavier's X-Men kick-ass! X-Men is a kick-ass show, now you know!
Check, please. Time portal, give me a break.
Welcome to episode 67 of Tooncast Beyond, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG on Mike, and joining me is...
Eduardo M. Fryer.
There you go. There you go. He is, you know...
Somebody has...
Just call him Fryer Duck.
Oh, funny.
The sad thing is that would make me Porky Pig. Today...
Uh-huh.
Today we are taking down a Tin Woodsman, blasting sentinels with our ruby quartz glasses. morphing into anything but Rangers, and not allowing girls to suck our life forces out of us by just touching us. Ew, cooties.
Yeah,
that's right.
Nice recovery there. Life forces, that's it. Life forces.
Yeah. Oh, no, trust me. There's going to be plenty of this whole series could have been an animated porno, really, if you really think about it. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the 1992 X-Men cartoon, also known as X-Men the Animated Series, because apparently everything in the 90s since Batman needed the animated series after it. Oh, boy. So, before we get too far into this and set the stage for X-Men, this is Eduardo's first time on Tooncast Beyond. You were on Geekcast Radio back when you still, you know, used a police box. Is it a police? God, I'm so not a Whovian, people. Is it a police box? Because I don't even know.
It's a police box.
Okay, good. At least I got that one thing right. The only thing I really know is don't fuck with the Daleks.
unless you're the Doctor himself, then go right ahead.
Now we need to recover from that somehow. Holy crap. So yeah, you can go back and listen to Eduardo and Mark from Mark Who 42 in that original GCR syndicated partner episode. Eduardo's going to join me here for the X-Men coverage. Did you also want to do Spider-Man? I don't remember.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I gotta admit I like X-Men more, but I do have fond memories of Spider-Man. And what is it about the Fox animated series cartoons that the heroes have to yell out their girlfriend's names?
Yeah,
I feel if you do a drinking game with X-Men and Spider-Man, you'll probably have liver failure based off all the times Cyclops has screamed, Jean! Or Spider-Man screams, Mary Jane!
With X-Men specifically, it's not just Cyclops doing that, because Wolverine does it a lot too.
Jean!
At least Spider-Man wasn't so overly sexualized as X-Men. We're going to get into this later, folks, but I am not a prude in the least, but I am sorry. Watching season one of X-Men, the animated series again, I forgot just how overly sexualized half of the female cast is in this cartoon.
Well, it doesn't. Well, in Rogue's case, it doesn't help that she's wearing tight yellow and green spandex.
Yeah, yeah. And now all I can think of is, these are the uniforms. What were you expecting? Blue and yellow spandex? Oh, that first X-Men movie can never be topped, really, if you think about it. Okay, so X-Men, the animated series. It's pretty scary, actually. It debuted Halloween 1992 on Fox as part of the Fox Kids Saturday morning lineup. It was the first attempt didn't go that well, but apparently this is the second attempt at a X-Men animated series, because there was Pride of the X-Men before it, and we will not even I just can't.
Well, hey, it's tough to forget Pride of the X-Men, mainly because it was a Sunmo thing, and it kept perpetuating the idea that Wolverine was an Australian rather than a Canadian.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
We did have Michael Bell using his Duke voice for Cyclops, which, okay, all right, I can take that.
Yeah, that's true. So X-Men, the animated series, as everyone knows, was a cartoon that ran from 92 to 97, ran 5 years in the 90s, and it is pretty much the quintessential X-Men cartoon. It borrowed a lot. You know, it adapted a lot of the comic storylines. What I find so interesting, and I know people hate when I or anyone else in the GCRN reads from Wikipedia, so I'm not going to. On Wikipedia, if you look at the main article of X-Men, the animated series, before they show you the season stuff, they go through, they have a link called Adaptations, and they go through and list all of the different adaptations, where they came from, out of the comics and stuff like that, which I think is really, really cool. What are some of your first memories going all the way back, you know, 20 some odd years to this cartoon? Did you watch this as a kid, or was it too violent?
Oh, no. By the time it came on, I was in like my early teens. So, you know, not too violent. I was a big Marvel fan, so I still remember this was back in the time where you could buy comics at places like CVS and Walgreens and whatnot. So I just remember going to one of these with my mom. I see the comic Marvel Age, and they had an article, X-Men, the animated series. And I was like, wait, what? And then I flip and it's like, wait a minute, there's an X-Men cartoon coming? What? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I waited patiently until it debuted. And yep, Halloween 92, what was it, Night of the Sentinels 1 and 2?
Yep.
And then we had to wait for a couple of months or so for the rest of the cartoons. So patiently waiting.
Yeah, or impatiently waiting. see, that's the thing about a lot of this stuff with these, I don't want to say old, but these classic cartoons is, and they even do that, they've been doing that for the last decade or so now, where they will give you a five-episode miniseries launching the series, and then they'll say, oh, no, wait, that's just the opening miniseries. So, you know, come back in X number of months, and you can see the whole series.
Right, or kind of like Cartoon Network did that with Venture Brothers, where they did this one-hour special, and then it's like, season 6 coming soon.
Yeah.
It's like, when is that? It'll be soon. When exactly? Yeah. Really soon. How soon? Trust us, it'll be really soon.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at this, because I'm looking at the episode list now, Night of the Sentinels Part 1 debuted October 31st, 92. Part 2 was November 7th, 92. And then Enter Magneto was November 27th. And then Deadly Reunions was January 23rd, 93. So technically, they really only took a month off between episode 3 and 4 because of the holidays, I guess. You know, that's really the only, you know.
I think depending on like the channel where you caught your Saturday morning cartoons, and depending on the Saturday morning cartoon, it then gets preempted by football.
Mm, yeah,
it's like, that's... yeah, we could show you what happens when Xavier and Magneto face off, but you know what? Instead, we need to do this college football game.
Yeah, that still goes on today for various things.
Yeah.
So the first season is 13 episodes, which I'm kind of surprised at because this is 1992. We're still kind of in the era of 80s. Well, it was the 90s, but we're still coming off of the era of the 80s animated syndicated thing where, oh my God, you had to have 65 episodes no matter what. You know, for syndication and all that. And I mean, a 13-episode season to me is something that would have happened in the last, like I said, decade or so. I like that it's a 13-episode season. I just didn't expect it. I haven't watched this in forever. Like, I remember when the DVDs finally came out for this series, Walt Disney put them out basically bare-bone 5-volume DVD sets, one for each season. And that was years ago at this point now. Yeah. So I haven't actually seen this show in a long time because I don't collect DVDs anymore. And
yeah, I have season 1 on DVD, and you know, I haven't gotten the other 4 seasons, and I've been a little disappointed at the DVD releases because, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The season, you know, season 3, I think, which is when they did Phoenix and Dark Phoenix Saga. Come on, man. I mean, call Chris Claremont out on the phone. Get John Byrne, you know? Do an interview with them.
Yeah, season three was Phoenix and Dark Phoenix. We will get to actually all five seasons at some point between now and next year. One of the things here at Tooncast Beyond that we're trying to do is I'm trying to get a lot of season ones done in this, you know, last year we started it, and this year we're continuing it, and hopefully after I do the first annual 25 Days of Christmas on Tooncast Beyond later this year, hopefully next year we can start doing season two stuff. I don't know. So we'll have to just wait and see. But X-Men season one, 13 episodes. I think the season is pretty much, I don't want to say flawless, but as far as storytelling goes, it's pretty well connected. There were several, well, there was one time in the original broadcast where Slave Island, episode 7, apparently episode 8 wasn't finished in time, so the first broadcast did not show the X-Mansion destroyed, which was interesting.
Yeah, and then when episode 9, they're rebuilding the mansion, it's like, wait, when did this happen? What?
Yeah, what? Exactly.
Hold it, what? Wait, pause. Back up.
Yep. What, out of the 13 episodes, do you have a favorite?
Oh, geez. That's tough. Because, I mean, the minute one pops in my head, I'm going, actually, wait, but then there's this one. I will say I like the way they adapted Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not exact, but, you know, still a cool adaptation. I also remember, like, the second part of that. I think it was on the second time I ever saw it that I noticed at the end Wolverine's skeleton.
Yeah, I noticed that. I didn't notice it as a kid. At least I don't remember noticing it as a kid, but watching it back again, because I had to make sure I paid attention for the show now, but, you know, I'm like, hey... Because Bishop keeps saying, oh, well, nothing changed and blah, blah, blah. And Forge is like, well, you've got plenty of time to go back and fix it over and over and over again. And then I look at the thing and I'm like, hey, that's Wolverine. Something did change.
And it's one of the – it also illustrates one of the things that was kind of cool about the show when it first came out. People died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this wasn't jumping out of airplanes. This wasn't jumping out just before the missile hit. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, first the first two parters. Some, you know, one of the X-Men died.
Yeah,
or at least seemed to.
Yeah, and then they eventually go and show. They continually show the tombstones for Cyclops, Rogue, Storm, and Jubilee. What always got me, even back then as a kid and even now as an adult, how they paced the tombstone scene. They go over Cyclops, Rogue, Storm really almost fast, and then they zoom in and kind of like do a Jaws thing. Dun, dun, dun. Jubilee died in 2010. And I'm like, okay, I know they're using Jubilee to essentially bring in the kids at the time because she was the only real kid character. You know, she was the young kid character. I get that. But it's like, seriously, you have to focus on the fact that Jubilee died at this point in real time 6 years ago.
Well, I think it was too, since she was supposed to be the kid character. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it's one of these things where common sense in these things is like, oh, the kid character's going to be untouched. That was kind of the way to say no, because we're dealing with a crap sack future and nobody's safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to see you're not going to see Plucky Jubilee. She's gone.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at this, the voice cast is amazing. But I don't know any of these people outside of this show.
Well, the only reason that I know, I know two people outside the show, and that is only because they did things after the show. Mm-hmm. I know that Cedric Smith actually had a cameo in that live-action syndicated Mutant X TV show.
Oh,
it even,
okay.
He even sounded like Xavier.
Well, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's probably his normal voice. I don't. Yeah. Like I said, I could be wrong, but.
And then apparently George, I'm gonna try and this is the best way I think I can pronounce his name.
Bowser.
Bowser.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like Bowser but with an "uh"?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, George Bowser is in the first live action X-Men movie, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be the trucker that drops Rogue off at the at that Canadian watering hole or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the closest. And again, this is after the cartoon was done. So.
All right, I gotta ask you this since we're talking about him, since he voiced Beast. Just throw out the whole plot line. Don't even just throw that all out. We all know Beast in the show, in the cartoon, at one point or another, oh my stars and garters. How did you feel about Frasier using the line in Last Stand? Regardless of how you feel about Last Stand as a film.
Hey, you know what? I liked Frasier saying, oh my stars and garters, better than I did Vinnie Jones going, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! I like that better than the I'm the Juggernaut moment, because that, if you're gonna give somebody a signature line, do it because of something they actually said in the comics, not because somebody made a YouTube video.
Yeah, I mean, come that's on. That's very, very true. looking at Cedric Smith's filmography here, outside of X-Men, he's done a few other things in the past, but I mean, like, I'm so used to looking at cartoons where it's like I know everything that that person is. You know, you look at somebody like Tara Strong or Peter Cullen or, you know, those kind of people, and it's like, hey, but yeah, I mean, just looking through, I do not, outside of the, which I'm going to have to now go back, because I don't know how you feel about it, and I know probably everyone else listening probably hates it. I loved Mutant X. I thought that show was amazing at the time.
You know what? It was interesting, and the fact that you had somebody like Vicky Pratt on it is that helps.
And now that happened, and we're getting completely off topic here, folks, but I don't care. I remember when I first saw Mutant X, I'm like, wait a minute, Lex Luthor's a good guy. What's going on here?
Yeah. No, I just...
Did you get John Shea in that show?
Yeah, no, I just, the minute Cedric Smith opened his mouth, I'm like, it's Chuck!
Yeah, it's Chuck!
Charles Xavier!
That's right. Oh, God, this is so hilarious.
And they killed him.
Yeah. I have to praise Cal Dodd, his voice act. Oh, God. Before, okay, folks, any of you that, you know, didn't find the X-Men until 2000, don't get me wrong, Hugh Jackman is the embodiment of live-action Wolverine, Logan, whatever, but Cal Dodd's voicing of Wolverine in this cartoon, to me, is the definitive voice of Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know what, I gotta agree with you there, Mike. Whenever I read any Marvel comics and Wolverine's there, I hear Cal Dodd's voice.
Yeah.
And it's very, and I mentioned it before at the beginning, you know, before the X-Men cartoon, before Cal Dodd, we had Pride of the X-Men, we had Wolverine show up on one episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and for some weird reason, he was voiced with an Australian accent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm sure when I saw Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends as like a little kid, it just it didn't affect me, but then as I started getting into comics and I found out Wolverine was from Canada, it started get, I was like, wait, what? No, he, wait, when do Canadian, why do Canadians sound like Aussies? What? Wait, what happened here?
Yeah. I will say that the only other one, and it's not just because I interviewed the guy, but the only other one that I absolutely love outside of Cal Dodd has got to be Steve Bloom. In both Wolverine and the X-Men and Superhero Squad show.
Yeah, yeah. I love Steve Bloom ever since he voiced Spike in Cowboy Bebop and voiced Roger in Big O. But yeah, his Wolverine is a close second for me. Mm. Yeah, it's Cal Dodd followed very closely by Steve Bloom.
Yeah. The one question, you know, because I've been interviewing people for years now, the one question I always wanted to ask Lenore Zahn or Zane or Zahn, whatever you spell, the chick that voices Rogue, did she have to take scream therapy for Rogue's scream? Because, I mean, Rogue's screaming is like half of the episodes that she's in.
it seems that every character at one point or another, especially Rogue, Charles, Jean Grey, you have what I like to call they get warped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get warped. You know, if there's some sort of strange otherworldly being that's approaching Earth, you gotta have Xavier put on Cerebro, you know, expand his mind to figure out what's going on, and then invariably he makes contact, the thing overwhelms him, he goes, ah! Like, throws the helmet down, and then whoever's there is going, Professor, what's going on? My mind, I couldn't grasp it. You know? I mean, same thing. Rogue touches, major villain whatever, fill in the blank, absorbs the power, goes crazy because she feels like she's about to explode. It's...
Yeah, I just absolutely love her voice for Rogue.
That's another one that's my go-to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Rogue,
boom, it sounds like Lenore Zahn.
Yeah, that's right. And then let's see who else we got. Season one, we've got.
We actually do have one celebrity in there. We're quasi.
Do it really?
Yeah, we got. I want to pronounce his name correctly. We got John Colicos as Apocalypse.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
From Battlestar Galactica.
Yep. That's true.
And Kor the Klingon from Star Trek. But, so we do have somebody who has some sort of celebrity status. He just showed up for a couple of episodes though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, thank God Chris Rock didn't know about voice acting back then.
Oh, jeez. Right, it could be worse. Yeah. We could have had the Nick Cage Apocalypse. These are my horsemen!
Oh, God.
Mr. Worthington, do you want to fly again? I could give you wings! You could be my angel of death!
Wait, no way!
What?
Hold on a second. Wait a second. Back the truck up. Oh, man, you gotta be kidding me. I did not know. Oh my God. I know so. Like, outside of Cal Dodd and outside of the people that are in this show voicing these characters, like we're saying about celebrities,
right.
A lot of the names I don't recognize. And I recognize now one of the names. Senator Robert Kelly was voiced by Len Carlson. For those of you who don't know, if you watch the Super Mario Brothers Super Show every Friday, it was the legend Ganon is Senator Robert Kelly.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Jeez. There's so many jokes I could make right now. I'm not going to do it. It'll be too easy. Yes. Not going to do it.
All right.
Not going to do it. Nope. Not going to give it to the nation.
Good Lord. So season one, I absolutely love this first season. It has all kinds of cool stories. There were a few things that I wrote down that I was like, wait, what? So one of the first episodes when Beast ends up on trial.
Yeah.
And I just write this stuff down, folks, because I kind of have to, because it's just like one of those as Sphincter says what moments for me. The prosecutor lady at the trial. What the hell was she wearing? The outfit had, looked like it had pockets on. It's like, wow. It's just so horrible.
Yeah, that's the what she's wearing. It kind of reminds me of going to Epcot and riding Spaceship Earth.
Yeah,
once you get into the age of computers, you have the computer science lady with the afro and the moon boots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? Really? That's what you're wearing to work?
Yep.
Okay, sure. You know what? Fine, go right ahead.
The other, I know this is me nitpicking, and I understand that, folks, but as I'm watching this, I had to write down certain notes as I was. So, in the courtroom scene, when Wolverine refuses to help Sabretooth, when Sabretooth busts in, Cyclops is like, well, fine then. And he just optic blasts the guards, like the deputized court bailiff guard. And I'm like, those guys should be dead now, right? Because, I mean, seriously, who the hell can sit there and survive an optic blast from Cyclops?
To play devil's advocate here and, you know, to pull out my Marvel zombie card, Cyclops can regulate the power of his optic blasts.
That's true.
So he could probably have it low powered enough that you're out cold for a while, but not like smelling like barbecue.
Yeah, and I agree with you. But the problem is, when he did this, it looked the visual effect of it looked like it was on. Oh my God, I'm going to kill you. Let's see. There's two controversial things that I want to bring up with this first season, folks. Night of the Sentinel shows that it's essentially. I gotta figure out how I'm gonna say this so I don't offend anyone, because oh my God, anyone gets offended nowadays. It's like,
well,
I'm
gonna hide behind my my desk chair right now.
No, okay,
right,
well,
behind you. You're right behind
basically,
you.
Yeah, thank you. Basically, this first season, the mutant-human relation thing, they essentially treat it as racism. Would you say yes or no to that, essentially? Because
yeah.
The humans are essentially hating the mutants, and the mutants, some of the mutants are essentially hating the humans.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Part of it, okay? So, and again, as I said earlier, I haven't watched this show in a long-ass time. So I'm rewatching this for us to do this podcast, and the first thing I think of is wasn't even racism. It was, oh my God, who's gonna let that transgender person into the bathroom? Because that's just the current political issue type thing now, and it's like, oh my God.
Actually, I think that's one of the things that the X-Men as a franchise, whether it's comics, movies, or TV, that's one of the strengths, in the sense that it's about prejudice, like, in any form. You
right.
Could equate it to racism. You could equate it to homophobia. You could equate it to, you know, we had, I think it was season 2, we had an episode that could be allegory for the AIDS epidemic. I mean, you know, it's that's the thing about X-Men. You know, you don't, it's not just about the allegory for racism. It could transform into whatever is the current.
Right. Yeah. And the other one, well, you already mentioned the thing from season 2, but it occurred to me here in season 1. Is it just me, or are they trying to say something about getting an STD with Rogue's powers? I may be going too far with this, folks, but it, like, seriously.
It might be a little, they may have ventured a little bit into it. I think it was just more, I mean, Rogue's a great example of, yeah, I think the positive of X-Men is, hey, you could wake up one day and find you have superpowers. But on the other hand, you need to kind of show that, well, this is like spinning the roulette wheel. You know, not everybody has cool healing factor like Wolverine. You know, you could end up like Cyclops, where you're going to have to wear glasses all the time, or you burn holes and everything, or you end up like Rogue, where you can't touch anything, period.
Yeah. What I do like about this first season is how they eventually move her through her character arc, and there's the one point with the whole Senator assassination Days of Future Past thing where I'm glad the animators did this. She went up and she kissed Gambit, but she put her hand, her gloved hand, in front of his mouth first.
Yeah.
So I did like that. And again, I really am not trying to be political here, but this is all I can think of as I'm watching this. Magneto is Trump, Xavier is Sanders, and Mystique is Hillary.
Wow. Actually, you know what? I'm actually going to go one further than you. I'm going to go one further than you, because when I think of Xavier versus Magneto, it's Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Oh, no.
or not even maybe Malcolm X, Farrakhan. You know, it's Xavier is the one going, okay, everybody, let's sit and talk it out. You know, come on, let's all just sit down. We can work things out. And here's Magneto going, oh, no. I already went through this once where, you know, I was part of people who almost got wiped out. Not happening again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the one who's like, okay, I'm going to mess you up before you mess me up again. Okay? Yeah. Went through this once, not happening again.
Mm-hmm. I love the line, Cyclops in one of the episodes, is like, his name is Sabretooth and Wolverine hates him. Professor X is like, did he give a reason? Does he ever? Love that line.
Yeah.
So we need to, you know, I mentioned earlier about the sexual nature of the women on the show. It's not just in their look, folks. It's in the screams. It's in everything that they do. Not only does Jean get... I saw this somewhere. I saw it recently online somewhere when I was trying to find out other information on the series and stuff. They basically use the term that Jean has exgasms, where she's constantly screaming and moaning.
I saw the same thing. And okay. Yeah, I think it does. It can sound a little bit like,
Yeah. The crazy thing about this is there's the episode where Storm, her claustrophobia kind of comes in. I think it's the Morlock episode. One of the episodes.
I think we first get into it with the Morlocks, and then we're stuck in the hot box in Slave Island.
Right. Yeah. But it's the first time when the ceiling is coming down.
Yeah.
The way that Storm is animated, the way the frame is on her. It's showing her almost laying down. Her chest is heaving. Her stomach is heaving. It's almost like she's gyrating to Marvin Gaye or something. Like, seriously, it's like, can sexual healing just start playing in the background, like, now? Seriously.
Marvin Gaye, I don't know.
Storm and Callisto with the double-bladed light, red and blue lightsabers. Eat it, Darth Maul.
I mean, there you go. Anybody who's ever read the comics that this was based off of, Callisto and Storm had a knife fight. But as progressive as X-Men was, this is still Saturday morning. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Had to replace the knives with the double-bladed lightsabers.
Mm-hmm. And why is it every time Storm and Rogue touch their communicators, I think they're playing with themselves? Storm's is on her left breast and Rogue's is essentially right, you know, where it's supposed to not be.
Yeah. Actually, Storm's was more kind of right in the kind of upper chest area. sort of kind of... It's where you put your hand when you do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Rogues, putting it on that belt. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, thank God that she wasn't wearing her uniform during the mall battle, because she may have... There was a chance she could pass by a storefront that was playing "I Don't Want Anybody Else."
Yep.
"Without You I Touch Myself."
Yep.
Somebody just looking out the window and going, "Wait, what?" "Sugar, I was calling for help." Okay, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, God. Now all I can think of is help. Help me, Ron Jeremy.
Well, hey, you know, we had Gambit probably, you know, slinging out the window, like in the first episode.
Oh, that'll, yeah, but the whole Gambit thing will come into play when we get to season 2 and beyond, because there's a whole more phenomenal sequence there.
First episode, what is he doing? He's hitting on the counter girl, and what's one of the first lines out of his mouth? He goes, "I like solitaire, okay, unless I got somebody else to play with."
Like,
wow, dude, why don't you know, not nice way of being subtle. Why don't you just tell her you want a boner? You just go ahead and say it. Besides, he's got that Cajun accent, you know, he could say a lot of things and the girl will just melt.
Yep, pretty much. As we go through these stories, I love the Apocalypse arc in this first season. The whole story, like, before we get to Days of Futures Past, I think it's pretty much from, is it Juggernaut, or when does he start coming in? Yeah, it's like right after the Juggernaut. It's right, yeah, it's
right after
the Cure, yeah. From the Cure to, well, it was just those two parts, come the Age of Apocalypse. I absolutely love those two episodes.
Oh, yeah, they got that's the thing about this series, is that most of the time, especially like season 1, they got the characters right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Apocalypse came in and it's like survival of the fittest, and, you know, he tortures the people that he turns into as hounds, but it's like, no, but you'll be better, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And people, Apocalypse is not all fuchsia. He's just not. He's blue, gray, and a little bit of purple.
Yeah,
Little bit of purple. Little bit.
Tiny.
Going back and watching, like, we've already talked about Days of Future Past, but going back and watching that and having already seen the film that came out a few years ago, I'm like, I don't know what... I really want to say the cartoon's better, but the film was all right.
You know what? I think both did the job with the medium mm-hmm. that they were given. The cartoon had 2 episodes to do this, and the movie had like 2+ hours. And I think given what they had, given the equipment that they had, both did a phenomenal job. Like I really can't put one above the other.
Mm-hmm. This whole first season, some of it, like, I could see where, and I'll be the first to admit this, most of the comics that these cartoon stories have come from, I have never read them. It's not that I don't want to, it's just I was too young at the time, and as a kid I wasn't really into comics all that much, not like I am nowadays. So this, to me, this and Spider-Man back in the 90s was... actually made me want to go out and seek out comics. What I'm trying to get at here is that I think that what I noticed is where all the movies pull lines from or pull scenes from for each of, like, the first X-Men movie in 2000. You got the Senator and all that, and granted, the movie took a little bit more of a... liberty with him at the end, most of the movie, getting him to mutate and eventually turning into water. But just watching this first season again, seeing the different aspects, like the part where Wolverine is on the table in the cartoon, it's Jubilee that goes up to him, I think. But in the movie, obviously they have that scene with Jean where he grabs her hand and all that. I just can see so many things in this first season of where the first couple of, like, when Wolverine goes out to the Arctic to face Sabretooth, I'm like, hey, it's Alkali Lake. Yeah. Well, when's Stryker going to show up?
Yeah, well, it's not quite. I mean,
right.
The thing with Wolverine versus Sabretooth, well, first of all, I think that's one of the better episodes in in season one, especially because we get to see that side of Wolverine who's like, yeah, I just want to take a, you know, I just want to, like, take a break here.
Mm-hmm.
I just
wanna... Yeah, episode 6, Cold Vengeance.
Yep. And even that, if anything, I find myself, see, I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. Mm-hmm. So last week's episode, The Broken Man, that the whole subplot with the Hound, I'm thinking of Wolverine and Cold Vengeance, except the fact that at the end of this episode, nobody gets... like seriously killed. I mean, yeah, they almost die from an explosion, but it's mm-hmm. one way.
Yeah,
but it's about the same thing. You know, you got a warrior type who kind of wants to take a break, and here's life coming in and being like, nah, nope, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Nope, no vacation for you from this. Mm-hmm. He even says it. He's like, there's no peace for me anywhere.
And in the 13th episode, it's like Master Mold. This came out March 20. The final decision came out March 27th, 93. So we're almost a full year into Batman the Animated Series. I don't know if the Hardak episode came out before or after this episode did, but I'm like, Master Mold wants to replace every human brain with computers of all the... And I'm like, hello, Hardak. I mean, I know Hardak was essentially duplicants, but it's very similar. It's not completely the same thing, but it's similar enough to where I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
Well, to be, again, to kind of play devil's advocate, the idea of the machines coming and being like, okay, you know, you guys are done. We're going to replace you with more of us. That's been around for, like, a while. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 2001 A Space Odyssey, all that stuff, but...
Well, and I'm sure there's some comics, like in the Golden Age or so, where you have Ultron. Yeah. Ultron's tried to do it, you know, it's a more common trope than I think.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, I'm just thinking of it in the context of the time.
Yeah.
Of the cartoon and the time of both X-Men and Batman. The Heart of Steel two-parter, which introduced Hardak, actually aired November 16th and 17th, 1992. So it was almost 6 months before the X-Men episode. What else about this series did you like, and is there anything that you didn't like about the first season?
Probably if there was anything I didn't like about the first season, it's what we already covered, the fact that they decided to take their sweet time bringing the other episodes out.
Yeah.
Giving us, like, a little taste and then being like, no, well, you're going to have to wait for the rest. As for like, the rest, I mean, I like this season.
Yeah.
You know, I like the season. I like the, I like how the, this was like the Jim Lee years brought to life. And you can tell that the makers were, you know, they couldn't take comic storylines like whole cloth for various reasons, mm-hmm. but they at least tried to get as close as possible.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they have to rework certain things and work around certain things, especially back in those days, because those, you know, the Board of Standards and Practices was, you know, pretty heavy on it. It's why I asked you if, as a kid, you were able to watch this or not, because of the violence on it, and because I remember when I first moved here to Kentucky, I was 13 and BTAS was in its second season, And at one point, I'm sitting there watching it, and my dad was fine with it. Whatever else, my stepmother comes in. Oh my God, this is Batman the Animated Series, mind you. Oh my God, this is too violent. You can't watch this ever again.
Jeez, what episode set her off?
I don't even remember. I really don't.
Because I mean, especially if we're talking like season two, or you know, when they heavily started using Robin, the show really didn't be that violent.
It was probably, well, I know it was 93, 94, so it was either season two or season three. So I don't even really remember what specific episode it was. I just remember her coming in and saying, basically just turning the TV off and saying, you're never watching that again.
Oh, jeez.
At least now, not in this. Yeah.
Now, if it was Mask of the Phantasm, I could kind of get where she's coming from because, people actually died in that. And there's the implication that Bruce Wayne got some.
Well, there was no implication. It was just off camera. It was there.
Well, the fact that we didn't see anything makes it implied, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
All right. So how would you rate season one on a scale of 0 to 5 stars?
I would say 4.5.
I'm going to go with a 4. There are a couple of little nitpicks of mine that I just... I can overlook them, but when I was... Just a couple of things. Like we said earlier about Cyclops and his blasts, because one of the reasons why I don't think he controlled it during that scene, the courtroom scene, is because I don't think he had the visor on. He took his glasses off. So I don't remember, and I just watched this, so I don't... Whatever, so... Yeah, I'm going to stick with a 4 for season 1. I got to say, though, that cliffhanger, it's like, hey, everything's all hunky-dory. Everything's kind of like going to be a happy ending. And then we have Mr. Sinister.
Sinister knows what the future holds. It's like, I remember that cliffhanger. I'm like, wait, we're getting Sinister next season? Yes!
Yep. So yeah, that's season one of X-Men, the animated series from 1992. Right now, I don't know if the original Walt Disney DVDs are out of print, but I'm sure you can find them somewhere online. If you want to watch the show online, there are at least two ways I know you can do so that are legal. You can buy the series on iTunes, or if you have a Hulu Plus subscription, all 5 seasons are available on Hulu Plus, and that's how I watch this as well. Because it's one of the reasons why we're doing the episode now, folks, is because I was looking on Hulu the other day, you know, a few weeks ago, and I'm like, hey, it's X-Men, yes! I think I posted a tweet, I'm like, who wants to talk superheroes? And you're like, me! So yeah, check it out on Hulu Plus.
What's he doing? Taking a nap?
So yeah, check it out on Hulu Plus, folks. We're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some audio and some ads and some other stuff, and we're going to come back to close the show after this.
We are here. You're supposed to know everything, Beast. What makes us like we are, anyway?
Gamma rays, pollution, ozone depletion, television, progress, lousy luck. You sure make a lot of noise.
You decide to join us, say?
Yeah.
Did you find the child?
Her trail went cold outside the house. Got bit by a dog, too.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so funny.
Rob Paulson.
Sure, Blaine, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Yay! Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
What's the matter? Teacher's pet got cold feet. Anytime, pretty boy.
Cyclops.
All right, folks, we are back here in Tooncast Beyond, episode 67. Eduardo, what have you got coming up? What are you doing these days? Are you doing any kind of podcasting or anything like that?
Actually, well, first off, I'm actually, as we speak, I just wrapped up the first weekend of a performance of Macbeth. What Macbeth is it's Macbeth, but told in a Mad Max setting.
Ah, interesting.
Yep.
So, it's Macbeth meets Fury Road.
Something like that. Yeah, like little bits of Fury Road. The art design is very much post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I keep talking with my fellow co-stars on that, and we still don't know whether or not we're affected by the Scottish plague curse, because it's been renamed Macbeth. Therefore, you know, really shouldn't have that much of an effect. I don't know how this works.
Right. All right. Like I said, I think I said at the beginning of the show, coming up next on Tooncast Beyond, episode 68, it's going to be Eduardo returning, talking about the Spider-Man the Animated Series season 1 from 1994. So we've got that. After that, we've got episode 69, where TV's Mr. Neil and I are going to talk about Stripperella. So, you know, make your 69 jokes here. Episode 70. Episode 70, I'm not sure what it's going to be, but episode 70 will be the final numbered episode of Tooncast Beyond for 2016, because in July, we're going to start recording for the first annual Tooncast Beyond 25 Days of Christmas. From December 1st to December 25th this year, you're going to get 25 podcasts from us. And episode 70 will be the last numbered episode, and then we'll go on a break, from that point until December. But yeah, we're going to start recording the 25 Days of Christmas next month in July, because, hello, Christmas in July, you know.
Didn't Nickelodeon start that?
No, it was Rudolph and Frosty. Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July.
Ah, okay. No, because I could swear that Nickelodeon did like a Nickelodeon or Comedy Central.
I'm sure they did, but they didn't start it.
Oh, okay. They were inspired by it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably. So, all right. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast Beyond. There are several ways to get in contact with us. Leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show Twitter is at Tooncast Beyond. You can follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Mine is at TFUN Mike. What is your Twitter?
Well, my Twitter is at, it's pronounced White Balloon King, but since Twitter only allows a certain limited amount of characters, it's spelled at WHTBLLNKING.
Alrighty then. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. There's a 5-minute time limit. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond and wish you'll join us next time when we will be giving you our thoughts on Spider-Man the Animated Series Season 1. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
Eduardo and Fryer.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
There should be
Take us out of here. Wait, what?
There should be an X-Men episode with Wolverine versus Krampus.
No. Just no.
Oh, come on.
Not for long.
They were fighting, and I wanted to help him. And boom!
Don't worry, Petite. You just hurt Wolverine's pride. That's all.
What is this weird place?
One part gymnasium, one part survival course. Affectionately referred to as the danger room.
All right, you self-centered, egotistical... Now, where on earth did he go?
Found you, spider, at last.